You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Thursday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. I will be the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast today, while Adam Friedman over at Syracuse gets hyped for his Orangemen to play tonight in the NCAA tournament. But this is not a college basketball podcast. Thank God it's not, because college basketball stinks. if you like college basketball, I'm sorry, it's just not my thing. But the Pacers played a game last night against the New Orleans Pelicans, and they lost 96-92 in New Orleans on the makeup game for the game that was rained out in, I want to say, early February. I can't actually remember when the date of that game was. But the Pelicans on game two of their back-to-back-to-back, and that made me think the Pacers had a chance here. And Jrue Holiday was sick in their last game against the Mavericks on Tuesday night. So I thought maybe the Pacers could come in here and have a good chance. But Jrue Holiday was not in a back-to-back-to-back because he did not play in the first game. And the Pelicans being at home for all three, they don't have to travel. So it's not like the biggest burden of all time. And they were able to come away and win 96-92 over the Pacers. And a lot of that was thanks to some stellar defense from pretty much everyone on the Pelicans. So there's a lot to dive into in this game. I think this is just a random observation that the Pacers went back to their 10-man rotation after McMillan, after their last game against the Lakers, said, you know, he liked the 9-man and he wanted to go back to it to see, you know, how it could affect the game. And they ended up winning by 10. And Glenn Robinson didn't play in that game, and they had minutes with Bogdanović at the 4. They kept Al Jefferson's minutes down. The rotation looked pretty solid, and McMillan seemed to like it in the post-game press conference. So it's really interesting to see him go back to Robinson, who was pretty ineffective once again. I mean, he only played 10 minutes, but a minus 6, only was able to get to the line once, didn't even shoot the ball besides that, turned it over twice. So we'll have to dissect his play a lot more in a later podcast, but he has been incredibly underwhelming since returning from his injury. He gets a pass, obviously, for missing so much time. But if the shot's not, you know, we were talking about this in the 8 points, 9 seconds group chat the other day, and this is completely a big tangent from the Pelicans game already. But, you know, he's shooting like 17% from three and 71% at the rim, which both of those numbers are not going to be what he ends up at. He'll definitely get higher from three and lower from the rim. But, you know, that's a concern that he's so low from three, and that's why he's not able to stay on the court, because that was his bread and butter last year outside of being Mr. Athlete. But anyway, they went back to 10 guys, and no one on the bench was really able to have a huge impact. Lance Stephenson played some pretty nice defense, and he was a minus 3, but he wasn't making his shots, and only 2 turnovers for him, but still a bench high, 2 turnovers for him. So, you know, Lance was okay. If he's supplying the level of defense that he did, and he got some good minutes with the starters and the fourth quarter he was in, but he was okay in this game, so he should not get killed. Another bench guy that deserves a look in this game was Trevor Booker, who was actually the first guy off the bench. You know, and I think that I can't believe no one's talked about this before this game. Big oversight for me for missing this, but like, him coming into the Sabonis role with Sabonis out was obvious. Like, that's why they signed a guy like this, to be the new backup center. But he wasn't subbing in first like Sabonis always does, right? Sabonis comes in for Turner first. That's what happened with Booker in this game. He was the first sub in, and he was great in that role. You know, the Emeka Okafor is the starting center for the Pels. He only plays 9 minutes. And then they kind of hodgepodge some minutes with Mirotić and Davis and Cheick Diallo in this. But Booker was able to find a way against every non-Anthony Davis guy to get baskets. And that made him pretty good in this game. He was 5 of 8. He was banging inside. He didn't take any of those ugly from the foul line extended, not foul line extended. I can't remember the name of the area of the court, which is embarrassing. Straight out from the lane line threes. There's the slot. Gosh, he takes that three from the left slot all the time. He didn't take any of those in this game. I hate when he shoots that. So he was solid. His 2 offensive rebounds were nice. But the big thing for the Pelicans was their defense. And if you heard me at Adam's tandem show earlier in the week, where we talked about Oladipo's all defense chances, I said a guy who is a good chance to push Oladipo out in the guard spot is Jrue Holiday. And, you know, a lot of people don't really know what Jrue Holiday's big deal is defensively, but he is super long and he's quick. And he doesn't, like, I think this year it's been different for him because he played point guard last year, and he didn't have DeMarcus Cousins. And then this year he had DeMarcus Cousins, and he's playing two guard alongside Rondo. So his offensive role is different and lessened in terms of having to create for others and having to like slice up the defense. So he's got more energy to exert on the defensive end, and he's really good on that end. And he really was able to do some stuff. He was doing a solid job on Oladipo, who played really well, I would say, actually, but was only 7 of 16 from the field, which is actually far and away the best shooting percentage for a starter. We'll get to that momentarily. But that was very impressive from him. And then when he, you know, screws up or, you know, funnels to the help defense, Anthony Davis is just sitting there waiting. And he, you know, we all know can be defensive player of the year level of a defender. So it's really, really interesting how effective he was able to be on the defensive end of the court. And in his 32 minutes, you know, the Pacers actually outscored the Pelicans when he was on the court, but he was just so massive in slowing them. Like the fact that he was only minus one when he plays with those, some of those, no Anthony, every, let me rephrase that. Every time Anthony Davis is out of the game, Drew's in. So the fact that he's almost even is crazy because Davis propels so much of what this Pelicans team does. And he was a plus nine and a 4-point win. That tells you all you need to know. And he's a guy we're talking about too. Before we get to Etuan Moore, the Purdue guy who tore apart the Pacers. But, yeah, Anthony Davis, just a beast. If you remember when they played in Indiana, him and Cousins both were reigning in threes and combined for something like 70 points. In this one, Davis had 28 on 9 of 14 shooting. Thad Young tried his best, I guess. And I think Thad Young's better on more athletic-y guys with like Giannis, who don't really have the tricks per se, but just have athleticism advantages over their man, but Davis has more acumen and moves and know-how because he's been playing basketball for longer. And Thad was struggling both to score on him. He was 3 of 12, missed both his threes, and to stop him. So, you know, Davis is just such a beast. He's probably going to finish top five, I would say. I don't actually know, an MVP this year. He had that tear in February that probably will propel the Pelicans to the playoffs. It's going to be pretty close. The West is going to be interesting, but this is a big win for them. But he also had, to go along with that, 13 rebounds and 5 blocks, and that was the big thing, was the 5 blocks. Like I said, when Giroux needed to push him, push defenders to Davis, he would do so, and that was working very effectively for New Orleans. And, I mean, that's just a nice fallback when you know that, you know, their defensive strategy changes when, you know, if you get beat base, you can't get beat baseline because then you're just done. So they just force guys to try to beat him to the middle. When they do, they're just, Anthony Davis is just lurking and waiting under the rim. And that happened quite a bit. And a lot of the Pacers pick and roll and pick and pops as they try to get their ball handler going middle, because that's the goal of every offense, basically, is get the ball into the middle going down towards the basket. And Anthony Davis just changes kind of everything around the rim and in the lane, and it made it impossible for the Pacers to score. And that's why, like I referenced earlier, Oladipo, 7 of 16, was the best shooting percentage by any starter. Collison was 4 of 11. Turner was 4 of 15, and one of those four, we'll talk about later, was awesome. And Bojan was 4 of 10, and the 3 wasn't falling for anybody. Let me rephrase that. The 3 was not falling for any non-guard, 31%, which, you know, given they've had some terrible games, is fine, but it's not good, especially in a game where you kind of have to take him because of Davis's presence around the basket. And Victor was hitting his, actually, which is good because we've been talking recently, you know, a lot, actually, about how, ad nauseum, about how he's been struggling to hit that deep ball. I'm so sorry about my alarm going off. But if he, you know, the three hitting, falling for him is huge. It's just that he could hit anything inside because of Davis in this one. And then Collison was 2 of 4. But he couldn't finish his normal mid-rangers. And when his shot doesn't fall, doesn't it look uglier when Collison's shot doesn't fall than when it does? Like, Wilford tweeted about it. Shout out to Will. And he has that hitch, and it looks kind of weird because he's short, where he, like his hip kind of goes outward, and then he extends his arms. Like, it's two motions, but it goes in. So what do I know about it? At the end of this, I'm going to talk about another one of Will's tweets. So, Will, if you're listening, thank you for giving me two things of content in this game. But Etuan Moore, the Purdue graduate, a huge game for him. Borderline renaissance. I mean, 10 of 15 shooting. I don't know if he's ever taken 15 shots more than I don't know if he's ever taken more shots than Anthony Davis in a game this year. That's something that I'd have to do research on. Excuse me for the burp there. He was a plus 9. He was awesome in this game. His 3 was falling. He was 3 of 4. Bojan was actually struggling to chase him a little bit. And then he himself was doing a nice job on defense. You know, like I said, it's a lot easier for some of these guys on New Orleans, where they can just funnel guys into the middle, which most defenses would tell you not to do. So credit to him. He looked really good in this game. I was impressed with him. I didn't know a ton about how he was playing. I knew he was playing better than he has in seasons past, but I didn't know he was that good. So credit to Etuan Moore for really shaking the game. And a lot of that was in the first half, which really changed the momentum. And the Pacers were able to take the lead in the third, but not pull it off. I didn't even talk about game flow, which is me being dumb. The Pacers were actually winning for probably more time in this game than the Pelicans were. They were winning in the fourth before the Pelicans took the lead with about 8 minutes to go and never looked back. I guess the Pacers took it back for like a second. I don't remember what the score was. Something like 90 to 80. I don't remember. But anyway, the Pelicans just took it at the end on a late surge with Davis in the game. And that was that. That was the difference, you know. Davis was just better than anyone else on the Pacers in this one. I really like watching Anthony Davis because he's so dominant. And another, a final point before I talk about another thing Will Fur said. Cheick Diallo played 19 minutes and had 10 rebounds. The bench rebounding without Sabonis, I know Al Jefferson played, but Al Jefferson only got 4 rebounds. Is tragic. If Al can't get rebounds, like on those long ones, he talked about this. I forget who asked him the question. But if there's a long rebound at all, you know, I trust Sabonis or Turner to be able to, like, jump up or, like, squeak out for it. But Jefferson just can't move from his spot. He can get anything around the rim. But anything that goes long, he's useless. And that's why he you know, he's not as good on those long ones that Sabonis would be. And you really need Sabonis in that scenario because Diallo, for all he isn't as a player, he's pretty limited offensively. He's pretty athletic, and he can spring out for those. And somehow he got fouled enough to get 5 free throws, even though he's not really a guy known for drawing fouls. So credit to Cheick Diallo for being kind of a game-changing guy, too. He was a +4 in a 4-point win, so I'm not saying he was the difference maker, obviously, but he played really well, and him being dominant on the glass kind of tells a bit of a story about what happened in this one. But Victor Oladipo deserves the closing thoughts, and this is both this game and, I guess, a parting lot of games discussion. So Will tweet. So it's been pretty much kind of a while since we've really dug into this, and I haven't really found enough film to provide a solution. So this is kind of a week, me just putting a thought in your head, I guess. Maybe we'll talk about it later in the week. But Cleveland was the first team I saw do it, where they really, really doubled Oladipo, especially off of pick and rolls. Like the second he gets around the screen, both the big and Oladipo's men are there, big arms, you know, making it hard for him to see passing lanes and navigate his way with the ball through the lane. And he's not super great at dealing with those double teams. And Will tweeted, you know, he's officially concerned about Oladipo's double team navigation. And I 100% agree because, he has not been good at that. We haven't seen a ton of teams doubling him since that Cleveland game. That's the first one I remember. But every time it does happen, he's right, you know. He backs it off, and the play just immediately dies, or, you know, he makes an errant pass when he tries to go early, and he can't figure out what to do a lot. And if they could get a good plan where, like, they have another screener come up, or they find the lob right away, or Oladipo, you know, he's so quick, he could try to just split right through the double team. You know, if they could find just a quick solution to break it down and make the defense scramble, that would open up so much. But currently, they're not doing anything with it. And even if Oladipo is a +10 because he's a good defender and the best scorer on the team, you know, that's a way to beat a team like the Pacers in the playoffs because you shut down Oladipo. Like, you know, he shoots 7 to 16. I know he's a +10, but he got shut down. Like, if he shoots 10 of 16, the Pacers win this game. You know, if they can find a way to get him with doubles and keep him limited, I think a lot of teams are going to have success defending this Pacers team. I keep saying I'm concerned about this team in the playoffs, and I could just be horribly wrong, but their offense is kind of conducive to being shut down in a slower-paced game. So I'm with Will here. If the team and they don't find a smart way to break these double teams and find a good solution to those, I officially am concerned about how that's going to go. And the easiest solution ever would just be to have the roll man just stop and be right there, but then you're just settling for a mid-range shot. So who knows what they're going to figure out. I think they will figure something out, though, because they seem to have overcome a lot more worse obstacles than that this year. But we'll have to see. I hope Oladipo can figure something out and Coach McMillan. But that has been it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. It will be me again tomorrow to preview the game against the Los Angeles Clippers. I'll be talking with a Clippers expert on that one because they haven't played yet this year. You can follow me at TEastNBA if I said something stupid, tweet at me. You can follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. If you have suggestions, keep tweeting them at us. We've gotten quite a few recently. Thank you so much, everybody, for that. We're working on the audio quality issues that we've been having. That's our bad. I hope this one was better in that department. Thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy your Thursday, and yeah, see you guys soon.